Hello again, and welcome to the Image Doctors, part of the Nikonians Talk Radio podcast series. Today is July 5th, 2007, and I'm Jason O'Dell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Thanks for joining us this week to listen to our drivel, whatever, our techno babble on Nikon products.
Yep.
And all things good with photography. And we had a fun weekend. We got to see a Fuji S5.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to give you our first impressions of what we thought about it. We didn't exactly get our hands on to test it. We hope to do that in the future.
Yeah, it's not going to be an extensive analysis of it.
But we do have some JPEGs to look at, and we got to play with it a little bit.
Yeah.
And then we're going to try to offer up some more tips for people getting started in photography. We've been getting a lot of requests for tips for those of you who are beginners. And maybe even if you aren't a beginner, it might be useful to have a refresher on some differences between the exposure modes in your camera and what to look out for. And as usual, Rick's got a photo prescription for you today, mm-hmm. and that hopefully will be helpful. So let's start off with our little morning.
Yeah,
techno babble. And that was, we had a friend of ours in town, or I did, I should say, and she wanted to shoot out at our local park, Garden of the Gods. And she happened to have a Fuji S5 in tow that she got on loan and was trying out for her own, because she's a wedding photographer. And so she's interested in using the S5 possibly as a wedding photography camera.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about the S5 for people that aren't familiar with it. It's a camera made by Fuji, but it's in a D200 body. So when you look at the camera, it looks a heck of a lot like a D200. And it uses Nikon lenses, has the same lens mount. You know, Fuji's been making cameras in this configuration for a while that have used Nikon bodies, Nikon lens mounts, and then the sensor is different. The software inside is different, and there are other little differences as well. But on a fundamental basis, it's an awful lot like a D200.
Yeah, the hardware is exactly the same. The autofocus is exactly the same. All the hardware components, you know, if you look through the viewfinder, it would be a D200.
Mm-hmm. Now, the big thing with the S5 and why it's appealing to wedding photographers is that compared to pretty much all other DSLRs in the market, it's got a wider dynamic range. And, you know, that's very appealing for people that want to hold highlights in the photo. If you have a narrow dynamic range, then you're more likely to see burned out highlights or shadows that are blocked up. And a wider one, which gets kind of in the color print realm, you'll have detail still in the highlights for a certain exposure and a little bit more in the shadows. And obviously that's great if you're photographing people wearing white wedding dresses.
Yeah, that's really important to retain detail in the white dress. Mm-hmm. One other feature of the S5 is that it has film emulation modes built into the camera. Mm-hmm. And you get this, I'm not sure if that works with the RAW. I assume it would if you have...
Yeah, we don't have the RAW processing software.
So we just shot with JPEGs, but you have modes that will emulate something like a Velvia setting.
Imagine Fuji doing that.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah, go figure.
And then they don't call it Velvia, though.
That's strange.
Nevertheless, there's about 5 or 6 different ranges of different presets for these tone and contrast and color settings. And that's an interesting feature and can be appealing to a lot of photographers, especially JPEG shooters. And, you know, the word on the street is for a long time, the Fuji cameras produce excellent JPEGs right out of the camera. Mm-hmm. That's generally been known as one of their strengths. So if you shoot in JPEG, you don't have to do a lot of post-processing. They can get really good quality images that way. So we didn't use the camera a whole lot, but the images that we saw looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what... I'm looking through these images now, and the shooting mode wasn't stamped into the EXIF data. So, and because we don't have the Fuji software to browse through these, I'm not sure if we'd get that information if we were using a different browser. So there's some shots where, you know, the white balance looks a little orange, but that could have just been because we were in one of those modes. We didn't realize what it was. So, but I got plenty of natural looking pictures, and I did a test where I was able to, you can choose the dynamic range, the standard or the expanded, all the way up to what it goes to something called 400%. And I don't know what it's doing with that 400% dynamic range, but I assume that's the whole Megillah, you know, the whole thing. And I took a couple of shots. It was late in the evening, and there's a noticeable difference in, you know, between the shot where I shot it at normal, where the clouds were kind of blown out because it's, you know, that late afternoon.
Yeah, and just to describe the photos that we're looking at right now, it's just a simple test shot of a residential street scene. And so you've got the foreground area that's, you know, darker, and then you've got a late afternoon, early evening sky with some clouds, and it's fairly bright. Mm-hmm. And in the normal mode, you definitely see the sky completely blown out in sections.
Yep.
Because it is a wide range of tones to have to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 400 setting or whatever, there's nice detail on the sky. So it's clearly handling that wider range well.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. And if I had known what I was doing, it might have even been better, because this was just a grab shot. But I figured that kind of situation, that late afternoon sky, tends to be one of the most difficult. You know, the sun was almost, you know, it wasn't down, but there was enough clouds so that you just had a huge amount of dynamic range in that scene. Mm-hmm. And it handled it fairly well, actually. And with, I imagine if you knew what you were doing from a post-processing standpoint, you could get even better quality out of it.
Yeah. And in the photos that you took where it was in a Velvia-like emulation, it looks pretty similar to Velvia.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
And mind you, I wasn't paying attention to what the white balance was set at. I was probably, you know, automatic and whatever. The reason why the settings weren't is because if you're used to Nikon menus, you're not going to... The Fuji menus are completely different. The Nikon camera settings are there for things like autofocus mode, and, you know, if you're choosing between... you know, the autofocus delay and the stuff we've talked about that you find in the custom settings. Mm-hmm. But you only get one bank of settings. There's not, like, where in the D200 you have the four banks. You only have one set of settings. And accessing the menus is a little bit different as well. It's not as intuitive, but it's just a matter of learning it.
Yeah.
So if you're already a D200 shooter and you go and you pick up an S5, don't expect right away to just know the camera. It's a different camera on the inside. You're going to have to spend some time learning where to set everything. Like, we sat around scratching our head for a really long time just to pull up the image histogram on the image playback. You know, we eventually found it, but it wasn't where I thought it might have been. It was somewhere completely different. So, but we
didn't have an instruction book, right?
Correct. We didn't have an instruction book. Yeah. It was that was the downside of having the loaner camera.
Yeah.
We didn't have the manual. So presumably, if you go out and buy one of these things,
it's probably
you
not
get
too
an
hard.
Instruction manual.
Yeah.
You'd be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
And I think the retail price of these is a little bit more than what a D200 costs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one area where you wouldn't want to use this camera is for action photography.
Yeah.
Regardless of what mode you're in, but especially with the expanded dynamic range modes, I think this camera tops out at somewhere between 1.5 and 2 frames per second.
Yeah.
So
probably fine for a wedding, but definitely sluggish if you're doing other things.
Yeah, I asked my friend, I said, well, would you miss that in a wedding? And she actually said when she's trying to get the kiss, she uses burst mode.
Hmm.
And in that particular, because she wants to make sure she nails that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, so there was a situation where she would use burst mode. Mm-hmm. Otherwise though, yeah, I mean, most of it for landscapes or portraits, 8 frames or 5 frames a second is really not necessary.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. It'd be nice if it went up to 3 or 5 frames a second. Mm-hmm. I think, hello Fuji, but I don't know what the limitations are with the, with their software.
Yeah. But as we mentioned earlier, we're going to try to get a demo unit for ourselves that we could keep for a while longer.
Yeah, and actually
have
put
more
it
than just
pieces.
A few hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you know, it takes a little bit longer to really figure something out and learn how to take advantage of it.
Right, and to do a true apples to apples comparison between the modes, and you know, have a controlled situation. We were just kind of taking grab shots, but it looks nice, and you know, it's well built as you would expect the D200 to be. So that's a real good thing. So hopefully we'll have more on that. That's a little teaser, and we'll get our hands on one of these. We'll give you all the.
If anyone's from Fuji, anyone from Fuji's listening to this, please shoot us an email.
Yeah. talkradio@nikonians.org. We'd love to hear from you. We're poor. We can't buy everything.
We come close.
But we promise we'll send it back if we get a loaner.
All right.
So we'll move on. And we wanted to bring in more suggestions for the beginners out there, because I know that's a lot of our listeners, and we don't want to always overwhelm people with these, you know, wonderful details about lenses you can never afford and cameras you can never afford and settings that you may never have on your camera because they're too complicated. So we wanted to come back down to earth today and talk about, in particular, the limitations and understanding the exposure modes in your camera. And by this, we mean like manual exposure, aperture priority, shutter priority, and program mode.
Yeah.
And really the ones we'll focus on today will be aperture priority and shutter priority, but all four modes. We talked about them a little bit in a podcast probably over a year ago when we talked about the basics of exposure and the concepts of that. But we've been getting a lot of questions from beginner photographers. Some of our friends, even at work, come up to us. You may have a friend at work who asks, hey, here's a question I get all the time. Jason, what f-stop do I use? Give me the answer. And I had to tell this guy, I said, well, there isn't really an answer. It depends. And that it depends answer is probably the worst one you can give someone, but it's true. It really does depend.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the things that we got on this topic, and we'll start going through the details here in a sec, is I was teaching a photo class on Saturday morning, so this is one of the topics, and you know, I got similar questions to the one that you just mentioned too, but it is puzzling, you know, for people at first. Why are all these modes on the camera? And, you know, I think one thing that is fair to say, because I started thinking about it after the class, is photography today is actually pretty complex. You know, so if you're starting out fairly new to SLRs and Nikon stuff and all that, all those things, there's an awful lot to learn, because not only are you having to learn the basics of photography, composition, and, you know, the simple parts of metering, but you've got all these modes and settings, and then now you're doing your own post-processing too, so you're having to learn that, and it is a daunting thing.
Oh, it can be. So to help you along with this, let me start off by giving our beginners out there a real basic concept of what exposure is anyway. Mm-hmm. And then the modes will make a little bit more sense if I tell you what this is. There's really, really only three factors that go into making the proper exposure. The idea is that a certain amount of light has to hit either the film or the sensor on your digital camera. And the way you can change, and the amount of light that is required to make the proper exposure is going to be, first of all, dictated by the sensitivity of your sensor or your piece of film. So if you had 100 speed film or 400 speed film, you would need less light to hit the sensor to make, or the piece of film to make an adequate exposure, properly exposed image, given the conditions that you're in. Given that, depending on how much light is around, the two things that are in the camera that dictate your exposure is you can change the length of time that the shutter is open. That lets light in for a longer amount of time. That fills up the bucket, if you will, to get the proper exposure, lets in enough light. And then the other option that you have is you can open up the aperture on your lens, or change the aperture on your lens, which modulates the force at which the light is coming through your lens. You can think of it that way. If you have a faucet.
Let's try something else here for a sec.
Okay.
Picture,
well, I'm thinking of the faucet kind of analogy.
Picture your eye. And when you look at in someone's eyes, you'll see the pupil and all that kind of stuff. And in dim light, you'll see it open wide to let in additional light, mm-hmm. going back to the retina. And the retina is just like the sensor.
Exactly.
Or the film. And in bright light, the same iris is what I meant to say, will constrict and get smaller and
that's
let in
aperture.
Less light. Right, exactly.
So if you're going to go back to the idea of, let's imagine for a second that to get a proper exposure, you have a bucket that you're going to fill, you put under the faucet, okay? And the size of the bucket is kind of like the sensitivity of your sensor. If how big the bucket is dictates how much water, or in this case light, you need to fill it up. And only when the bucket is filled up to the top do you have the proper exposure for your scene. Mm-hmm. So if you have the faucet on in a trickle, it's going to take a long time to fill up that bucket.
Yeah.
So that would be like a long shutter speed, because it takes longer to get the appropriate exposure.
Right. And the trickle is because you were using a small aperture.
Yeah. But if I open up the faucet wide, then more water comes in and the bucket fills up more quickly. So that's the same thing. Now, if I had a small bucket, I wouldn't need as much light to fill it up. That's like changing the sensitivity of
to a higher ISO.
Exactly.
Like 400 instead of 100.
Right. So if I had a 100 speed bucket, a 200 speed bucket would be half the size of a 100 speed bucket, and a 400 speed bucket would be half the size of that again. And so each time it would take me less time for a given set of parameters. So that's kind of what we're trying to do. You can either change the shutter speed, you can change the aperture, and you can change the sensitivity. Now, two of those parameters are going to be impacted by the camera that you're using. Not all cameras can have the same range of shutter speeds, although nowadays most shutter speeds go up from like usually 1/4,000th or even 1/8,000th of a second, all the way down to bulb, which is it's open.
However long you hold,
however long you hold the button. But the aperture is going to be dictated physically as a property of your lens. If your lens says f3.5 on it, then that's the widest it opens up. Compare that to a lens that is 1.4 as the widest aperture. You can open that to 1.4, whereas your 3.5 lens, you can't get to 1.4. It's a physical property. So you're going to have some limitations. And the reason why we're bringing this up is because this is going to impact how you're using these exposure modes. So now that we've utterly and thoroughly confused you as to what exposure is, let's talk about the different exposure modes. And we'll start with the easy one on the camera. That's P,
right?
Program mode.
Yeah, exactly. And in that one, the camera is going to control both the aperture and the shutter. So for a given amount of light, it's going to set the exposure to what it thinks will be correct, and it's just going to make a reasonable compromise kind of choice on the shutter speed and aperture. Probably not too terribly different than what you might do for a lot of shots.
Right, and this is basically what happens when you're using your point-and-shoot camera.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same idea. Now, the one parameter that you could modify in program mode is the ISO. You can change the sensitivity of your sensor if you're paying attention. And I say paying attention because a lot of times people want to just pick up the camera and look through the viewfinder and shoot. Mm-hmm. And you're not paying attention to that little readout that tells you what f-stop and what shutter speed the camera has chosen for you. But if you're looking at that and you see that, for example, that your pictures are coming out blurry, it's quite possible that there's just not enough light in that situation to register a fast enough shutter speed. And so the camera's just doing what it needs to give you the adequate exposure. The image is exposed properly, but you might have blurry people moving in your pictures.
Yeah, or you may have had trouble hand-holding the camera at that slow of shutter speed.
Exactly. So you could, if you see that situation, you can increase the ISO of your camera, or with some of the Nikon cameras, you can modify the program mode. You can turn the little command dial while in program mode, and it will come up with different combinations of shutter speeds and aperture.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know what you're looking for, then you can pick one that works for you. Now, again, the aperture can only open up as wide as the lens goes, so you hit a sticking point. So at some point, you can't let any more light in without going to a higher setting. And this takes us to the first of the program modes that I learned on, which is aperture priority.
Yeah. Look, before we hit aperture priority, let's talk a little bit about when does program mode make sense. Now, sometimes I'll read things that say, never ever use program mode, and it's evil, and leads to brain dead photography. I think that's an exaggeration, given that you can alter the program settings like you were just mentioning by changing the command dial. So, you know, if you want your camera just to be kind of ready to go general circumstances at a certain light level, it's not a bad starting point as long as you keep your brain engaged. And you look at what the settings are. If you need a little bit faster shutter speed, you know, twiddle the dial. It can be a quick way of doing that, and that's not necessarily bad. If you have to hand the camera to someone else to take a photo, and maybe they're doing a whole sequence of them in different light, again, that's probably a good setting to have on there.
Right, because then the camera, you know you'll get proper exposure.
Yeah.
You might not get the depth of field you want. Mm-hmm. You might not get the shutter speed that you want.
Yeah. But although program mode seems like it's more simple and easier to use, in reality, there are times where it gets harder to use and it's less convenient. And that's why you start looking at some of the other modes.
Right.
Like aperture mode.
Like aperture priority.
Yeah.
Now, that's the first mode that I ever learned how to use, because my old Nikon EL2 had that. Mm-hmm. That was automatic. I had the choice of manual or I could use aperture mm-hmm. priority. And the reason why would you choose aperture priority? In this mode, you tell the camera what f-stop you're going to use. So you fix an aperture value. And you can adjust it, but I mean, for any given shot, you fix the aperture. And then the camera decides, given the amount of light coming in through that aperture, it'll set the shutter speed. Now, this mode is very, very useful for a lot of photography, especially things like landscapes and, in some cases, wildlife photography, but predominantly landscape photography.
Yeah, with landscape. You know, the reason that's handy is you're often trying to get a certain depth of field.
Correct.
You probably have the lens on manual focus, and you might be using some hyperfocal distance technique or whatever. And you know that you want a certain aperture, so you've got the camera probably on a tripod or something like that. And
or the opposite example, where you're shooting a portrait. And you want a very small depth of field mm-hmm. because you want that background to be out of focus and blurred. You know, people always ask me, well, how come your camera, you get these nice, you know, out of focus backgrounds compared to my point and shoot?
Right.
Well, one of the reasons is your point and shoot's using program mode. You don't get to pick. And it's saying, hey, this will probably be good if we shoot it at F8. Mm-hmm. And maybe you wanted to shoot at F4.
Right.
With aperture mode, you can tell it which aperture to use. Now, you have to understand that you're going for a particular depth of field. To achieve that, the camera's going to pick whatever shutter speed is necessary. So if it's bright outside, or if you're using a high ISO, you'll get a fairly fast shutter speed. But as the light goes away, the shutter speed just continues to get slower and slower and slower.
Right.
So you have to pay attention when you're in aperture mode, especially if you're hand-holding the camera. Pay attention to what that shutter speed is. When you're looking through that viewfinder, learn in your camera, go to the manual, find out where it displays the shutter speed value, and pay attention to that. Because if it gets too low, and you start seeing the shutter speed drop below, say, 1/125th or 1/60th, down to 1/30th or maybe 1/15th of a second, if you're hand-holding the picture, it isn't going to be sharp. And that's a real issue to be aware of. You're going to get a perfectly exposed, blurry image. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when you're doing... if you're in that situation where you're taking pictures of landscapes and you want to have a lot of depth of field, you're shooting at F11, F16, something like that, that's where you need to use a tripod.
Right.
Because otherwise you just won't be able to hand hold it. So, hey, if you have a tripod, who cares if you're shooting at a slow shutter speed? It won't matter.
Right. Now, one area of action photography where aperture priority is really handy is a situation where you want to just get the highest shutter speed that you can for a certain light condition. And what you might do there is open your lens up all the way. Let's say you're shooting with a 300 F4 lens. You might open up the lens all the way to F4. You're not going to get a lot of depth of field, but it might be just fine for some of the action shots that you're taking. And then the camera will give you the very highest shutter speed that it can.
Right.
For that situation.
Because that's what it's matching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing wrong with using a wide aperture because you can get nice isolated subjects mm-hmm. that way. That's a good mm-hmm. thing. But what we brought up here is that the trade-off for aperture priority is shutter speed. The effect on the image is that the shutter speed can get slow. Mm-hmm. And so the impact of that on your image is potentially subjects that are moving will not be sharp.
Yeah. Once again, just as with program mode, you have to keep your brain engaged, mm-hmm. watch the displays inside the viewfinder, and make certain that your shutter speed hasn't gone too slow.
So if you're not concerned about the aperture, and instead you're very concerned about getting freezing action, then shutter speed is more important to you than aperture, and you may consider using shutter priority exposure mode. That's mm-hmm. the S mode right. in your camera. And in the S mode, you set the shutter speed, and the camera will choose the aperture that is necessary based on the conditions, the amount of light coming through the lens. It'll vary the aperture as needed to ensure that you get that shutter speed. But there's a catch, as with all these things. So in great lighting conditions, that's fine. You can set the shutter speed to 1/500th or 1,000th or whatever you might be at. And in good light, you'll be just fine. But with all these modes, you have to watch out for something. Remember that the aperture is a physical property of the lens. You can't open up a lens any wider than its widest aperture. It just doesn't work. Okay, you can't do that. If the light decreases, as the light level goes down, the camera is going to start opening up that aperture. If the light drops to a certain level, there is no more aperture left. You can't open the aperture anymore. And what's going to happen here in shutter priority mode is you're going to start underexposing your images. Yeah.
Now, if you look in the viewfinder, with most Nikon cameras, you'll see a little indicator that says low, L-O, yeah. to indicate that you've run out of aperture and now your exposures are going to
be dark. Or you may see the light meter indicator start to show a third of a stop under. Mm-hmm. You know, you might see that too, and eventually it gets low. But you got to look out for that. Now, in that situation, what do you do? Well, your only other option in this mode is to, if there's not enough light for the situation and for your lens, then you need to increase the ISO and the sensitivity of your sensor. Now, you can only do that up to a certain point as well. So for those of you who are in like really crummy gym situations, you know, you can run into a situation where you're shooting shutter priority at 250th of a second, or you want to use 250th of a second, I should say, or something like that to freeze action. You're indoors. You've hit ISO 1600. You've run out of room. And your shots come out. They still come out dark. And if you see all these dark pictures, it's because you just ran out of light. So you have to understand the limitations. At some point, you can run out of light. You know, there's no magic situation. And the only thing you can do there is get a flash or get a faster lens.
Yeah.
You know, that's really all you can do. So that's what you look for in that mode. Now, the other mode, of course, is full manual, in which you have to control both the ISO, or both the aperture and the shutter speed. But if you're using that mode, you have to know how to use your light meter, and that's
a different topic.
That's a different topic altogether. Yeah. So there are some limitations. But these modes can work really well as long as you know what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And so just sort of to recap, in program mode, the camera's sort of doing everything. So you have to keep your eye on what settings it is choosing. And usually in your owner's manual, it'll show a little matrix that has a graph or a table, or it shows what it's going to pick for a given situation.
And but usually, you can override it.
You can override
it. Like we talked about.
But you got to know what you're doing. In aperture priority mode, you can control the depth of field, and you'll always get the right exposure, but you have to keep your eye on shutter speed, because if it drops to being a little slow, you're going to get blurry pictures.
By the way, aperture priority is also a really nice mode if you're doing macro stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's a good one. You know, you want to dial in like a real small aperture. Mm-hmm. And then shutter priority mode works very well until you start running out of light, in which case you'll have a symptom. You'll start to see dark pictures. And if your pictures start coming out dark and you see the histogram is shifted way over to the left, then you know that you've run out of light and you need to adjust your ISO accordingly, or take other measures
right.
to get the shutter speed. So hopefully that didn't confuse everybody. You know, go back and reference our earlier podcast on exposure, and hopefully taken together, you can get a better picture. But you know, if you know that, if you know what to look for, then you'll get a lot better results out of your camera.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Rick's going to bring us home today with our weekly prescription, and that's for a tip that you have for shooting off-center subjects.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a pretty common situation to be, let's say, photographing something or someone, and you don't want to place them right smack in the center of the frame.
Right, because that's one of our rules.
Bullseye shots, right. You want to try to avoid that, and ideally have them a little bit off-center, maybe the rule of thirds thing or whatever it is.
You know, just not in the middle of the frame.
Right. Pretty common thing. Now, what a lot of people will do is if they're shooting in the single servo mode and they've, you know, got the autofocus set up on their shutter button or whatever, they'll press halfway down so it focuses on the subject that they want in sharp focus, and then they'll shift the composition so that they're now off center.
Totally normal.
Right.
Makes sense.
Right. It does. However, you have to be a little bit careful with that, especially with certain lenses. And the reason is that some lenses, especially ones that are a little bit faster, you know, an aperture of 2.8 or 1.4 or something like that, sometimes can have a curved field. And what that means is, were to point your camera at one subject and have it focused in the center of the frame and then shift over, it's actually not in focus anymore.
Just the slightest bit.
And it's because the field is actually curved. And if you see this effect with a lens and you look carefully in a photo, you can actually see how the distance changes across the frame. Maybe farther out in the center and closer toward the edges. And sometimes it's subtle and sometimes it's fairly pronounced. It just depends on the lens. So what you want to try to do if you're focusing on something that will be off-center in the final composition is use those other autofocus sensors that you see in the frame. You know, and usually you can shift those around with a little thumb pad on the back. And just try to get one that's as close to the final location of your subject as you can, and that way you'll avoid this problem. Now, like I said, not every single lens will have that problem. It'll be dependent on the lens, but what you might want to do is just experiment with some of the ones that you have, especially if they're a little bit faster, you might see this problem.
A good example would be like the 50 1.8, because that's a very affordable. A lot of people might have the 50 millimeter 1.8.
Yeah.
It's so try it with that.
Yeah, the 1.4 is more likely to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a even faster lens.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see it at times with my 17-55 2.8. You know, so that's one lens where you want to.
Do you see that at all apertures? Does it make a difference if you're stopped down or?
It's mainly at the wider apertures.
Okay. So this would be for something like a portrait where you're going to have you want that soft out of focus background.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a great tip. And if you have a suggestion for a tip or a show topic or anything else you'd like us to do, except we don't take requests for singing live on the air.
But that's in everyone's best interest, really.
That's right. Yeah. We try not to break your computer, break your iPod that way. Please send us your suggestions to talkradio@nikonians.org, and we will gladly read your email and reply to it and hopefully use it on the air. And that is all we have for this show. So until next time, we'll see you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.